So I guess I should start out by apologizing that what I'm going to present is not what's in your book, but we just crunched the most exciting data ever, and so I'm hoping that Terry will be really, really excited about this. So let's see if I can do this. So the only part that there is a bit is that when I finally get to the Lena part, one of the control groups was run by Lena. So that was the Spanish-speaking control that we used. So what I want to do is, this study began way before Lena was, but it, as you, hopefully you'll see how this relates to Lena. We have a population study. We've actually been studying kids with hearing loss in Colorado since the mid-1980s. This is since universal newborn hearing screening. These children were all born between 1997 and 2003. And we got 65 to 70% of all possible participants for this study in the state of Colorado. This was after all birthing hospitals in the state had established universal newborn hearing screening. So we were able to follow 146 children with longitudinal data. They had to have three or more assessments from 48 months to 87 months of age. And they had to have some baby data. If we didn't have them in the infant period, they weren't included. So for the possible participants out of the entire state of Colorado, we got 95% of the kids to stick with the assessments all the way up to 87 months of age, which is really amazing. We lost very few kids. Some of them ended up moving out of state, but not very many of them. The children in this study all had to have nonverbal cognitive development within the normal range, and they were all English-speaking children, and they all had hearing parents. So that drops off a lot of kids because 40% are multiply disabled. We have about 15% of our population that are non-English speaking. We don't have actually that many deaf parents. So for this study, these children were assessed at 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, and 7 years of age, plus or minus 3 months. The median age of identification was 3 months of age, so this was a very early identified group. The median age of intervention start was 8 months of age, and actually part of this, for this group of children, we've changed the way we do the intervention date, because Colorado has this interim from age of identification. They see an early intervention provider, but they're not the early intervention provider who sees them for the next 3 years. So we actually started with an early interventionist earlier than 8 months. So for those of you who really want to know the hearing loss of these kids, 87 of them had severe to profound hearing loss, and because everybody in hearing loss wants to know how many of them were cochlear implant and how many of them were hearing aid, we had 49 children with cochlear implants, 35 children with hearing aids, severe to profound, and 48 children had mild to moderate hearing loss. So I have lots of results on lots of measures, but actually the amazing thing is that I could pick the test and it all looks the same. So this is what they look like longitudinally from birth through 87 months of age. And the thing that's the most important is the black line is normal development. And you can see that by the time they're 7 years of age, severe to profound, mild, moderate, are all either at or above the mean of the tests, which is quite actually amazing. Now, we've done a whole series of studies on this cohort, and one of I'm not going to go over the statistics, but we used hierarchical linear modeling. We have used many, many statistical programs for looking at this, from multiple regressions to ANOVAs to just about everything you can imagine we've used on some study with these children. But we're primarily asking, do individual child characteristics systematically differentiate the language trajectories in young children with hearing loss? Now, these are the characteristics that are very strong predictors, but they're all unchangeable. All of the kids who come to us have this already. So they already have their degree of hearing loss. Sometimes it gets worse. They already have their nonverbal cognitive development. They've already identified or we wouldn't have them, and we know what their maternal level of education is, and that's not our job to change that, right? Now, with our whole model, oh, actually, there's one slide missing in here. So I think we'll come to it later, but if I use just those four variables, I predict about 6 or 7% of the variance of their outcome at 87 months. But this model, which I'll talk about because we've added some more variables, predicts almost 70% of the variance for vocabulary, expressive vocabulary, and 71% of the variance for receptive language, which is receptive vocabulary and receptive syntax. It predicts 46% of the rate of language growth for vocabulary and 81% of the rate of language growth for the receptive language. Now, part of that, the lower prediction rate for the rate of language development is because once you get on a trajectory, you kind of stay on that trajectory for vocabulary development. Syntax development is a little bit different. So here is, for this cohort of children, we had the smallest group for maternal level of education was less than 12 years. We only had 7 of those families. High school diploma, we had 46. Some college, we had 23. College graduate, we had 69. Colorado has a very high educational rate just across the entire state. A lot of our less than 12-year-old, and I'm going to 12-year education, high school, below high school education, are non-English speaking families, and I will show you that data also. But here again, the median, remember I said the mean, but these children were very early identified. The median age for age of identification was 1.5 months. Today it's 29 days, so we've even moved it lower. The lighter IQ full scale score was, the mean was 104. So again, these are the four primaries that are in every study on deafness are these things that can't be changed. They explain 37% of the language outcome at 84 months and 39% of the rate of language development. So now what we're doing is we have added two more variables. A variable of what their language quotient was at 36 months of age. Now, you'd have to look through all of our studies over many, many years to see what predicts that language level at 36 months. But it is parent imitation, parent expansion, symbolic play level of the child, personal social development, emotional availability of the parent, parental stress levels, the mastery motivation of the child. It's a lot of things. And the intervention does a lot to work with parents on many of those aspects. Then we have, and this has to be the craziest thing, because I've been following these kids in this population for a very long time. In this particular study, I had over 1,000 language samples, which we spent 10 to 13 hours of coding on for many, many different aspects. I'm not using all of them because we sampled them at 9, 15, 21, 27, 36 months. That was the parent and the child in the home. 48, 60, and 72, and up to 80, I forgot the 84 months. Those were with a speech-language pathologist, because when that testing was done by a speech-language pathologist, not in the home. The average was 25 to 30 minutes of videotape. So what happened with parent word frequency is it accounted for 16% more of the variance on the expressive one-word picture vocabulary test and 12% of the variance on the test of auditory comprehension of language. But what you'll see is that we divided parent talk. I have these slides in there. In the upper quartile, the parents who talked the most had 1,515 words in that half an hour language sample. And when they were in the upper quartile, this is rather scary, right? Their children had a 29-month advantage in expressive vocabulary at 84 months of age. And the parents in the lower quartile had 984, less than or equal to 984 words. But actually, these were pretty talkative parents even on our lowest quartile, because most of our parents, when we do the LENA, are at the 50th percentile or above. But that's a huge gap at 84 months of age. For receptive language, that parent word frequency had a 15-month advantage from the top group to the bottom group. Now, in addition, if we throw in the maternal level of education, we get a little bit more variance accounted for. 5.4% on vocabulary, 3.2% on receptive language, 8% for the rate of language development for vocabulary, 5.4% for the rate of language development for auditory comprehension of language. So this is, because we only had 7 kids in the low SES, which was by maternal level of education, we actually divided the group into low and high SES from high school diploma or lower and college degree or greater for the high SES. Okay, so these are the quartiles for parent word frequency in a half an hour videotape. 984 was the lower quartile, 1245 was the middle quartile, 1515 was the upper quartile. Okay, these are our results that I just couldn't not talk about. So at the bottom, you'll see the lower, mid, and upper quartiles of parent word frequency. On the vertical, you see their vocabulary score at 7 years of age, right? So the dark bars are the low SES, meaning low maternal level of education, and the light bars are the high SES, meaning college degree or greater, right? So this is a graph that says that you can teach parents to talk more, and that this early intervention program has done that. And so if you're in the lower quartile and you have low SES, you can see that your vocabulary level at 84 months is significantly lower than if we teach you to talk in the first 3 years of life, right? It tells for 3 years of life. By the time they're 7 years of age, their vocabulary score is identical to the group that had a high school, had a college degree or greater. And this is really exciting to us because people have, every time I present enough, I've had over 500 different babies in all of our studies over the years. And people, child language specialists all over the world have said, well, there's something wrong with your data because in birth through three, you never show a maternal level of education effect. And the reason we don't show a maternal level of education effect is because this early intervention program teaches parents to talk to their kids. And we don't have that many who are not talking to their kids. But when we fail, and they have low maternal level of education, the outcomes are pretty bad. Now we do know that in this cohort, most of the parents with less than high school education were teen parents. And teen parents are a difficult population. This is a similar chart. Although the middle quartile and the upper quartile are very similar, and this is for the receptive language. Now, this is a much more complicated graph to just say that with deaf and hard of hearing children, how much the parent talks makes a difference, but there are lots of other variables that also can either raise your language level or sink your language level. So on the left-hand side are early identified high parent word frequency. And you can see that all of the children are between those dotted lines, which is the normal range. And there are differences by degree of hearing loss with the mild moderates at the top, the children with a severe hearing loss a little bit lower. If their cognitive levels are lower, then that sinks them a little bit more. If their maternal level of education is lower, it sinks them a little bit more. Now, if you look at the other side, those are children who are late identified, and by late identified, it's after 3 months of age, actually, in this group. So there is a difference, you can see, between those late and early identified. But remember that most of our early identified were actually identified pretty much in the first month and a half of life. So when you look at our other data, it was before 6 months, after 6 months, that made a difference of 50% of chronological age. This before 3 months, after 3 months, makes a difference of about 6 months at 87 months of age. So that 6 month language difference is still, for most kids, right within the normal range of development. This is just to show that we continue to get no maternal level of education effect. These are 213 infants and toddlers followed longitudinally from birth to 3 years of age. Maternal level of education didn't add any additional explanatory power. We accounted for 66% of variance of language outcome on the vocabulary, 48% of the rate of language growth. Because this included our multiply disabled children, nonverbal cognitive level accounted for most of a lot of the variance. I can raise that up to 80% of the variance if I add the parent talk variables, but it's not added in here. But this just goes to show you that the early intervention is teachable and it has lasting effects. So these are our high performers among that birth through 36-month period of time. And the important thing to look at here is that there is representation across all levels of maternal level of education, with 20% having 12 years or less. So you can have less than a 12th grade education and end up being the top performer of a group of 213 children, because early intervention can change the impact of maternal level of education. So this just, what I wanted to show you here is that we are using LENA. Nobody in their right mind is going to do what I've done over my lifetime, which is have the transcriptions of thousands of videotapes, right? But LENAs can tell us similar bits of information. I'm going to actually just go to the adult word count, because I think that shows the what I want to point out on this. Miranda Aragon has a poster in which we've compared Spanish deaf and hard of hearing, typically developing Spanish, typically developing English, and English deaf and hard of hearing. And if you look at the first two bars, you can see that because of early intervention, the Spanish deaf and hard of hearing have an average, I think, educational level somewhere, it's below 12th grade, it's about a 6th grade education. And the deaf and hard of hearing are lower than the control group, the LENA control group, which is the typically developing Spanish speaking. And look at the difference with intervention, that the Spanish speaking deaf and hard of hearing are actually right at the level of the typically developing English. Kind of interesting. And the typically developing Spanish are at something like 6,000 words. It's half of what the kids, the parents in intervention are. And what's interesting is when you look at the English, their SES is higher, right? And they are at somewhere around 18,000 words with intervention, as compared to the typically developing English speakers, which are about 12,000. It takes us about 17 or 18,000 words with deaf and hard of hearing children to get the same amount of conversation turns in child vocalization. So I just wanted, I thought that Terry would love the fact that it is teachable, and I think that even though we have a population, we don't have really a random assignment to treatment, but clearly the parents have learned to talk to their children, and it has had a lasting impact on their outcomes. And considering that they have significant hearing loss, it's pretty phenomenal. So in closing, what I want to say is that I just want to thank Terry and Judy Paul for their unbelievable belief that this could be done with technology, because it has changed the world for so many children, children with disabilities, and I think the impact on children from lower SES homes is going to be just unbelievable over time. And without your ideas and your belief that this could be done and your investment of your money into making this happen, I think it would, we wouldn't have Lena. And obviously the international impact is just incredible. I did want to say just two more things, and I know I'm over time now, but Danielle Holzinger is here from Linz, Austria. And for those of you who are in deafness, there's going to be a family-centered early intervention international conference in Austria in 2014 called Forging Global Collaborations. There'll be a lot of presentations on Lena and the use of Lena with deaf and hard of hearing people. So if you are looking for a wonderful place to go and deaf and hard of hearing, this is going to be a great conference. And for those of you who love Colorado, we're also having, Lena has pushed me into autism and deafness. And so July 10th and through the 14th in Vail, we're having a Frontiers in Hearing conference. And one of the days is going to be devoted to deafness and autism. And I'll be showing our data on the Lena and the children with autism. So for the topic, I promise that tomorrow when we have the breakout, I will talk about how we use Lena more.